right, everyone, welcome to Nerds on the Rocks, episode 4, long awaited. My name is Michael, aka Magus113, once again, and I am back, finally, after a very, very long time. And here with me today are Brackabone, aka Earl, and Xantar. Say what's up, guys.
Hello.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Well, today we got some interesting topics to go over. We have our first topic on video game movies, and just a pretty general discussion, kind of fueled by the release of Prince of Persia: Sands of Time. And our second segment will be talking about TV shows and their cancellations, because there have certainly been quite a few of them at the end of this year. And as always, we'll be ending our conversation with cocktail chatter. So let's get right on it. Video game movies. I think we're going to try and stay more towards the, we can say the American versions of video game adaptations, because for the most part, there aren't many Japanese ones and they don't tend to suck.
Well, I mean, to be fair, the only thing they've already produced are the Pokemon movies that come out here anyhow. I think you might find one or two exceptions, but for the most part, it's the Pokemon movies, which I'm sure most people stop caring about after the first one.
Well, I mean, from what I'm looking at, because I got a list here of like video game movies, and like the Japanese ones, aside from the fact that there's like 12 Pokemon movies, I mean, there's like there's some anime adaptations. Resident Evil Degeneration was originally made in Japan, which wasn't that bad. And
I didn't enjoy that movie at all.
You didn't like it?
No, it was odd. It's my favorite Resident Evil movie, and it's the one that sticks closest to the games.
Hmm.
So,
well, there was
the
that
ending featured the world's ugliest dress.
Oh God! And then there was Advent Children too. Advent, but you know that's for the Final Fantasy nuts.
I must say, I'm very surprised to find that there was an adaptation of Animal Crossing.
I'm curious to see what that is, though. I want to see like it would be making a game out of The Sims or something.
Well,
yes, indeed. I was not aware that Animal Crossing had a plot to adapt.
Hmm. You know, now this is going to bother me, and now I'm going to want to see it. So screw you with your with your interest. Now I'm going to waste another hour of my life. But anyways, back to back on topic with the Western productions, if you will, of video game movies. Starting with, apparently from this list that I'm seeing here, the one that started it all, Super Mario Brothers.
Well, it would make sense that Mario would be in the first major video game. Because outside of Pac-Man, he was the biggest star in that era. So it only made sense after the success, I guess, of the Super Mario Bros. Super Show and Super Mario Bros. 3 cartoon and Super Mario World that they'd release the movie. Of course, the movie had very little to do with the actual game.
Yeah, we had the ridiculous Goombas, the Yoshi dinosaur, Bob Hoskins, who's, I think, he's like from New England or Australia or something like that, right? No, he's English. He's English.
Yes, he is British.
He's British, and he's pretty good at hiding his accent. Like with Super Mario Brothers and what was the other one that he did that I liked a lot of? He was in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Ah, yes.
And
John Leguizamo.
Oof.
And the recently departed Dennis Hopper as King Koopa.
Yes, that was a very sad day for film, I guess we could say, in general.
I mean, the one, I guess, good thing, if you want to say, that came out of this movie is we got the Mario Brothers' ass name as being Mario.
Yeah, Mario, and
after
Luigi.
Then they have decided to stick with that the entire time with Mario, and Luigi Mario.
Yeah, I don't know who decided to do that. Iggy and Spike are in it too, which I honestly don't remember off the top of my head, but excuse me.
They were his really stupid nephews.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, there was a lot of like he had like his power ups, like his jump boots. He actually had like jump boots. Mm-hmm. The bombs, like these little tiny bombs you had to wind up and they start walking on the floor. The princess in the movie was not Peach, it was Daisy, who at the time was all you know for her role in Super Mario Land 1, and she wouldn't be seen again until, I think, Mario 10, if I could be mistaken.
Yeah,
Super Mario Land 1 was the Game Boy one, was it not?
Yes, it was. I actually had that.
Yes,
well,
it was good.
Yes, it was very good. I think they bundled it in Japan with the Game Boys, but in America they did the Tetris bundle, if I remember correctly, because that's what I had. Did they? Yeah. Either way, moving on from that. Let's see. We ha- yeah, 14% on Rotten Tomatoes. Eek.
And in fact, no movie on our list has breached 50%. No movie is favorable.
Yeah, I think the most favorable we found was
Final Fantasy: The Spirits Within at 44%.
44%, which was animated, not live action, and then not even really very much of a Final Fantasy game, more of a Final Fantasy in name and certain concepts than it, you know, was a Final Fantasy game, which I don't see how. I mean, it that would mean that it would have had to stand on its own as a video game movie, but you know, it didn't stand on its yeah. It didn't, I'm sorry, it didn't stand as a video game movie, and then it didn't stand as a movie on its own. So they kind of flopped with that because I know they spent big amounts of money to get the server farms and the computer farms and stuff like that to get the movie all rendered.
Which brings us to the fundamental question of this segment. Do you think that any video game can be made into a good movie? I am on record as saying that I do not think so, with the possible exception of Prince of Persia.
Possible exception, but reviews aren't looking too favorable because it's actually under our champion of this list, I guess, if we could call it that.
Yes, unfortunately, and I have a review of that myself, which I am posting the link to on our Game Tavern forums.
Awesome. But yeah, I mean, can you imagine how much of a huge flop this Final Fantasy movie was? The film, like, it was 140,000 frames, and each one took like an hour and a half to actually render on these computers. They had like 960 Pentium 3 computers, which apparently was a big deal when it came out, which is back in 2001. It was like ridiculous. By the end of the production, Square had a total of 15 terabytes of artwork for the film. That's ridiculous. Like, 15 terabytes is a lot now. Yes. I mean, and you can think about how much that all cost to be stored, and it was just not a good idea. Which you would here's one thing that I'd like to figure out. What is it about video game movies? Is it that people like they want to keep making them?
I think it's because it's the new thing. It's a resource that hasn't really been tapped. There's so many video games that they can steal and pull resources from. It's like you don't have to make a new story. You have this world and design that's already created for you. It's the same thing like how you have the resurgence of comic book movies. It's like this untapped market that they're trying to find. Like, I mean, if you take a look at the next four games on the list, Double Dragon, Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat, and Mortal Kombat 2, like, what would be appealing about those games to anybody to make a movie about? Street Fighter is about one dude fighting another dude in 90 seconds, and they take that and make it a two-hour movie. The same thing with Mortal Kombat, even though it has a ridiculous plot opening over the game. Double Dragon, same thing. You beat up people from left to right, and they took it and decided to make movies because somehow they thought, oh, you know, we can do this. We can make it 2 hours of entertainment for people.
At the surface, it would seem that video games have the same aspects of comic books that would appeal to a mass audience. They have a lot of action, and they have colorful characters. They have a pre-made plot of sorts. Unfortunately, video games, for the most part, have much less characterization than comic books.
Yeah, you have to get into more of like the RPG range where you get a lot of real character development. And if there's any non-RPG games that have character development, it's because it's a character that's established through like multiple sequels, for example.
But even then, I mean, character development in the video game it usually ranges in the same course where you start off with a person who's a bit whiny, who doesn't want to do their job, and then they're forced into this role, and then as they go, they become the hero that they were destined to be. And it kind of gets old hat. But even if you take that, that's usually over a 30, 40-hour game. You're supposed to do it in 2 hours. It seems kind of odd. And I think, to me, that one of the two biggest problems with video game movies are that most of the action in a video game is interaction. You make it up as you go, and that can't be replicated in a movie. Like, you can't have a hero movie because the whole point of the series is that, you know, you're having these big shootouts that you can approach different ways and you can finish different ways. The movie would just kind of be a big set piece, but it's still kind of focusing on one character who's like the Superman, I guess.
Yes, and without interaction, the fact of the matter is that Master Chief is a very terrible character.
Oh, absolutely. He has all of what, like 10 lines in the entire Halo trilogy? Like, really.
And that's another thing with the game Akira, which, even in the name, it's more about the environment than it is about the characters, and you want these characters to be, I guess, special and stand out, and, like, can you name video game characters that you'd want to see for 2 hours on a video, on a movie screen?
Well, again, I would say that Prince of Persia could have been that movie. However, they made several changes from the game, in fact. And in my opinion, I will just preview my review of the movie. I will say that I believe that the changes that they made from the game were to the detriment of the movie. For example, it no longer takes place within one building, and he has to travel around jumping off walls and climbing ridiculous poles and so on. It instead takes place throughout the entire kingdom of Persia. So there are a lot of travel montages, and the movie at some places looks like a road movie, which is a little bit boring.
Yeah.
And also there are no sand monsters, which is a decision I do not personally understand, because this is a movie made by the people who brought us Pirates of the Caribbean. You would think that they would be eager to include monsters for our heroes to kill without any guilt.
Yeah, especially being that you can pretty much kill things that don't breed and get a PG-13 rating still. You can't really stab a human with a sword and get away with it.
Yeah. They made a Wing Commander movie?
Yes, they did.
I'm kind of glad I never heard of that.
Okay.
The games did have pre-rendered cutscenes, so it was probably at the time a game that had a story that was a groundbreaking story at the time.
Mark Hamill was in, like, two of them, or was it only, like, the third one?
Earl, you are the Mark Hamill expert.
I am not the Mark Hamill expert. I just know him as the Joker.
I know he was in the third one, I think. Pretty sure it was one of those.
Random question. Has there been any video game movies that you have actually enjoyed? I mean, they might not be high cinema, but you can still have an enjoyable movie that isn't great.
I will admit that I actually enjoyed the Street Fighter movie when it came out.
The Legend of Chun-Li?
No, not the Legend of Chun-Li.
The original one with...
Good God, man! Not the Legend of Chun-Li. No, I enjoyed the Street Fighter movie. It was... Now, keep in mind that back in, what was it, 1994, so I was 10. Yes. No, I'm sorry. 11. In any case, it was the kind of movie that would appeal to a young person like me. It was colorful, it was brash, everybody acted way over the top, and... people knew signature moves. It's unfortunate that Guile was the main character, but as a young boy at that time, I did not care. Nor did I care that he had an accent from Brussels.
Oh, yes. I can't say I really loved any of these movies, but I really liked Silent Hill. Like, they kind of got the atmosphere down.
I enjoy Silent Hill. I think part of it is because I've never actually played the game, so I don't know what they ruined. But I kind of enjoyed it as a kind of, like, thriller, you know, movie. It has nice visuals and stuff, and it's kind of intriguing. I'm not going to say it's, like, the best movie ever.
They did do a good job of trying to get people, like, really creeped out and stuff.
Yeah. I love the Mortal Kombat movie. I still do. I actually own it. It's good, cheesy fun, and I think it's in the spirit of the game. It's fun for what it is. You don't expect any, like, great acting and stuff, but I thought the characters had life to them. The fight scenes were kind of cool, even though they kind of avoided using any of the special moves, which they did in the second one, and it just made it really bad and cheesy. I'm also a fan of the Doom movie, which I'm sure a lot of people would hate, but again, it's a game I don't play, but I thought it was a nice, you know, like, space destroyer. It was before I saw Aliens and whatever, so I'm sure that would take away from it. But at the time, I enjoyed it.
Well, I think you should simply admit that you only watched it because The Rock was in it.
Okay, I would admit that I was only interested in it because The Rock was in it, and he talked about carrying around the BFG, so...
The BFG. There was actually
an interview with him in which He came on The Daily Show, and then Jon Stewart asked him some obscure question about a locker in a particular part of the map, and The Rock was able to identify what is in that locker. So apparently he has actually played the Doom game.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. A lot of people played Doom, you know, way back in the day. But
I'm kind of curious. I don't think anybody's ever been asked that, because I know they do that with comic book movies. Like, they always ask, like, did you read the comics growing up? I never really see anybody get asked, do you play these games when you're growing up and stuff like that? But then I guess it wouldn't really help with your character if you knew the game. Like, okay. And what about the Resident Evil movies? Those seem to be the longest running franchise, as they're coming out with a fourth one this year.
The Resident Evil movies feature the worst, most blatant Mary Sue in all of moviedom.
I'll give you that. I kind of like the first one. I mean, it wasn't it wasn't a masterpiece, and it wasn't very true to the game. But I liked it more as a movie. The first one, I kind of liked Apocalypse because they had the Nemesis in it. That was the one.
I was gonna say that I actually started disliking them the more and more they tried to add stuff to from the video games, like the Nemesis Project, and I think Chris and Kara in like the second or third one. And they just start trying to put piggyback stuff from the games into it. Because I know like the fourth one has Wesker and Chris and Karen. No, Chris and Jill are in it and stuff like that.
But that's their own fault, because they decided to go in whatever direction they wanted to go when they made the movie. So now everyone was probably complaining, saying, oh, you know, why wasn't this in the movie because it was from Resident Evil or whatever. And, yeah, they're kind of trying to piggyback their way into it, but it makes absolutely no sense. I haven't seen Extinction, so I don't know how much stuff they're throwing into it from there, but I would assume it's just as bad.
I don't remember Extinction. I just know that it has, because like the movies never end happy. Because the first one, she ends up in the hospital that like where they're drugging her. The second one, they have the helicopter crash, and I don't remember how the third one ends.
And let me make a comment here. This is an inside shout out to the Game Tavern forums. However, I would just like to say that this is proof that actresses do not always get cast based on their martial arts abilities. I have given several examples of this. The Sly Moogle, shut up!
Oh. that's bitter. Speaking of the forum, I guess, you know, the big thing is the Mass Effect movie. How do you think that will work?
It probably could work really well. At least well enough. I mean, everyone's complaining, oh, this game is like 20 to 30 odd hours, you know, and how are you going to fit all that into 2 hours? But I mentioned this on the forums, but I mean, I played through the first Mass Effect just so I can have a better chance of understanding what was going on to play when the second one came out. I beat it like a couple weeks before it came out, if not at the same time. And I played it on easy, and I just did all the main plot stuff, and I flew through it through about 8 hours, which essentially makes it a lot easier to crunch things up.
Well, if they want to make it really easy to crunch things up, they just need to base it on the second game, because that has like 5 minutes of plot and then a whole bunch of recruiting missions. So you can spend like 2 hours just getting your teammates together and then having a plot point at the beginning and a plot point at the end. That's actually one of the things I have issues with, is that since it's such a huge ensemble cast, like, are you going to focus on trying to get all these characters together, or is it just focus on Shepard and his thing? And the thing is, at least with space, is we have Star Wars, we have Star Trek. Those are two big, huge space operas. We don't really have room for a third one, and I don't see Mass Effect doing anything surprisingly new in that realm.
Yeah.
Indeed, I was just thinking that the Mass Effect movies, they do not feature they cannot have a main character from the games, because after all, Captain Shepard is a game created by the character. He is not, or he or she is not a distinct character whom everybody is going to know. Everybody has their own Captain Shepard. Therefore, it seems to me that what Mass Effect would bring to the big screen is its universe, which I am not sure is distinctive enough to stand on its own.
Hopefully they kind of try and keep some kind of deal with the ensemble cast for like some of the characters. Cause I mean, the way that they modeled a lot of the characters, I mean, they look like, for the most part, they kind of look like their voiceover counterparts. So I think it'd be kind of funny to have Seth Green sitting up in the front as Joker and, what's his name? Captain Anderson, whatever that guy's, his real name is. I always forget whenever it's really important.
But then again, you're looking at people who probably have cameos like 2-3 minutes of a movie, and I guess, you know, I agree with Xantar, is that the game is based on decisions you make. You get you know, usually you get like two or three options for every dialogue tree. It's like, do they kind of shoehorn, like, okay, this is the path we're going to take with this character. So, you know, if you didn't play this game this way, it's too bad. Because it's like I've played bits and pieces of Mass Effect 1, I've replayed Mass Effect 2. And the game pretty much just assumes a starting point anyhow if you haven't played Mass Effect 1. So would it just assume that's the storyline that they're going with? Sort of like how Mortal Kombat has multiple endings, but they always have one ending that they assume throughout the whole series.
I think what they're probably going to end up doing is they're going to keep it more of the likable Captain Shepard, because, you know, no one can really relate to the asshole if that's how they're going to try and sell it. I mean, I'm sure they all have, like, for example, Jonah Hex. I mean, comic book related, but regardless, Jonah Hex, he's like the anti-hero. So, I mean, he's also kind of likable, too.
But have you seen a Jonah Hex trailer? That does not look like the Jonah Hex character.
No, it doesn't at all, but I'm just saying. His persona is kind of like that from what I've seen. I've never gotten too big into Jonah Hex, but...
And it also appears here that we have an Alice movie under the works. In other words, that is to say, Alice, American McGee's Alice. I worry a little bit that it is going to be coming out a little bit too close to the Alice movie from Tim Burton. However, that is actually, now that I think of it, another game in which could be translated well to a movie. In fact, the game itself was essentially a movie with third-person shooter elements thrown in between the cutscenes. And it was a decent movie.
This is actually for, no surprise, but this is actually the first I've heard of Alice. I mean, maybe I can find it somewhere and check it out, but it looks interesting enough. It's definitely got the a dark kind of, from what I can see on the cover, at least a gothy aspect to it.
It has an interesting visual style, which I think would be appealing on the big screen, and it has a dark story, yes.
It's set years after Alice's adventures in Wonderland through the Looking Glass and what Alice found there. So it's kind of taking source material from the books, is what I'm gathering from here.
That sounds like how Tim Burton's movie came out.
Yeah, there is that. But I haven't read the books either, and it's been years since I've seen the original Alice in Wonderland, the Disney one, which, you know, it's not exactly a good comparison, but, you know. Okay, so I think we can just kind of wrap that up, unless anyone else has got anything to say.
Let me just ask you a question about the Tomb Raider movie.
Sure.
That movie is seen as, I think, widely seen as the breakthrough movie for video games. However, I was perhaps alone at the time in saying that the Lara Croft Tomb Raider movie was a terrible movie, and I wonder if that is an opinion that holds up today. I do not think that movie ages very well, but I do not think that it was a very good movie at the beginning, notwithstanding the $100 million box office.
Yeah, I was whatever. I saw it and I was like, okay, it's Tomb Raider, whatever, throwaway. I haven't seen The Cradle of Life either, but I don't imagine it being much better. Okay, so yeah, I guess we are good to move on. All right, so we're going on to our second segment about TV show cancellations for this year, and we got a lot of big names that I'm going to throw out here that are getting thrown off the boat, I guess. We got Flash Forward was canceled over V's renewal. Last episode aired, I believe it was last week. What else do we have? Scrubs was finally canceled officially. The new Scrubs Med School or whatever. We also have 24, the final episode, finally aired to Earl's dismay. Heroes, finally. And I'm trying to see some other stuff here. Oh, Nip Tuck is out. Monk is out. And I believe Zach Morris's return to TV, Raising the Bar, is also axed. So what do we think, gentlemen?
Oh, okay. Just one quick note. Well, two quick notes, I guess. One, this is like the third time Scrubs has been canceled, if I'm not mistaken. It got canned from NBC, then it switched to ABC, then ABC ended it, and then they decided to do the spinoff, which then ended this season again.
So. I think you're adding one extra cancellation in there. When it wasn't that it was canceled. I don't know why it was moved to ABC after the seventh season, but once it was moved, or I think it had might have had something to do with the writer's strike, because I know that part of season seven being the way that it was because of the writer's strike.
But it was canceled. Well, NBC dropped it, and ABC picked it up because I believe it's one of those weird shows where ABC is actually the ones who produces it, but it was aired on NBC. And when NBC dropped it, ABC stepped in and gave them a final season.
Yeah, Touchstone had it for the first six seasons, and then that seventh season with the writer's strike was when ABC picked it up, and then they moved it over in the eighth. I'm kind of glad Scrubs is ending because it really didn't fit for me that the show was going to keep going on. I mean, the whole entire point was for when all of them would be finishing their residency, you know, and that's only 7 years. I mean, I could forgive that they went into the eighth season because of the writer's strike, but I mean, that's it.
I was gonna say, I think they finished their like training like during the fourth season, because after the fifth season they were doctors, because Elliot went into private practice, and I think Turk was like the chief of surgeons by the end of the eighth season. So they were in Scrubs for a while now. I actually kind of enjoyed the spinoff. It took on its own identity after a while. The only problem was it always had that Scrubs umbrella over its head, and if they had renamed it and remodeled it a bit, it probably would have done much better than just calling it Scrubs again.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of TV shows that are ending ending way past their prime, Heroes has been canceled, but it seems that there is no justice in this world for Smallville still exists on the air. And I would also like to point out that Law & Order has been canceled. I will be recording a special comment about NBC and the cancellation of Law & Order later in this podcast. In any case, I wonder if Heroes still has any fan base at all who still wants to see the 2 or 4 hour final event.
I do know people who want to see it. I'm sure many other people pretty much gave up on the show during the second season. I watched some of the third season again, and I gave up halfway through that. And I got tricked into watching the second half because everybody told me how much better it got in the second half. And how so much better for Heroes still is crap for most normal shows. So I stopped completely during the fourth season. I really do not know or care what they need to wrap up for the fans. I don't think the fans deserve it if they stuck with the show for 4 years. But that's just me.
Harsh.
I think they tried too hard. I mean, I always, my references to Heroes was that it was X-Men for retards. I was never a huge fan of it at all.
I'm not going to say comic books don't get this stupid or ridiculous with deaths and people losing and gaining powers. They've been going on for 60, 70 years or whatever. They need to keep doing stuff like that. The thing is, and this is a problem I think with most American shows, is that there are a lot of shows that have one-season concepts that they just keep on dragging out further and further.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing, the same case would have been made with Fast Forward if it wasn't canceled, is that I thought it was a concept that worked for a single season. If it had gone on any longer, it just would have been weird for it to continuously have these blackouts every year and them not to figure out what's causing it or how to stop it.
And in point of fact, I have read that Tim Kring originally intended the Heroes series to have one set of characters for the first season, and then for most of them to be moved on or killed, and then a new cast of characters to be introduced for the second season.
I can kind of see that, because they did introduce a whole lot of new characters during the second season, but then they ended up killing off pretty much everybody they introduced during the second season. It kind of reminds me of Lost in that way, where they introduced a bunch of characters from the tail section of the ship, and pretty much killed off everybody except for one by the end of the second season.
Yeah, I think Lost, the thing with Lost was that a lot of people probably lost interest because they didn't plan out their writing with the show too well. I enjoyed watching Lost. That's probably because I didn't stick through for the rest of it, because I watched the entire first season, a couple episodes of the second one, and then I kind of got the quick heads up, you know, I played a little catch up because friends that have seen it told me. And then I saw the finale, it made sense for them to try and do what they did that way. Cause I don't honestly see how they could have worked it out any other way. I know that, there were like certain little things that Geo Take Giant Steps on the forums that he noticed that they were running through like some cave and there was like a body that was holding a book, and I think it was a Nietzsche book or a Sartre book or something like that, but it's about pretty much just kind of doing your best with what you have or some or it was something like that. Because so I guess it was kind of a nod for the writers to say, yeah, well, we kind of wrote ourselves into a wall here, and you know, this we're doing our best to kind of work around it.
You see, I don't think they wrote. Oh, go on.
I was going to say that that is no surprise to anybody who has followed shows by J.J. Abrams before. For example, Alias was a show that began with two strong seasons and then veered into science fiction territory, and then it seemed that every twist was designed to mess with the audience's head rather than actually produce a coherent story, and by the end, there was nothing to tie up because everything was going in every direction and the ending was quite unsatisfactory.
I know that J.J. Abrams actually dropped like he wasn't really working with Lost after about this the second or third season.
It's the first season.
Oh yeah, so and they kind of went off on their own without
it. The best thing about that apparently is that even though he had to show after the first season, they continue with 5 other seasons, is that they still use the original ending that he intended from the get-go apparently, and I don't think the show ever really met up to that ending. Like, it seemed like everything they tried to do was just to find a way to tell a story somewhat more interesting. Like, I think season 3 or 4 introduced the flash forwards, and then there was this, then they started introducing time travel, and then somehow half the people got stuck in the past, half of them in the future, half of them in, I don't know. And it just seemed like they couldn't tell a compelling story enough without throwing in these gimmicks to try and help propel it some way. And I'm not a huge fan of it. I stopped watching after 2 seasons because I just found it boring. But from what I've gathered from reactions from the finale, it seems like there are 2 camps. There's the camp of people who wanted some type of finality to the mysteries of the island itself and what it was. Like what was, you know, what caused like people to walk again, cured the cancer and stuff like that. And then there was the people who were happy with the finale, who cared more about the characters than they did about the who, the what, and where, and whys. And I think the finale gave more closure to the characters themselves than it did to anything else that they built up for 6 years.
Anyone else think it's funny that the first thing that that I can see that has anything to do with J.J. Abrams was Felicity?
It was a reasonably good show.
I kind of laughed it off because it was one of those whole college drama things that they had on the WB or whatever, and I never really paid much attention to that.
Speaking of shows with gimmick plot twists, 24 has ended. And
that's a stab to the heart.
Subject to a movie to end the final plot, which left the final episode, which aired last May 24th, rather unsatisfactory in my mind because it acted as a setup for the movie.
I didn't mind the finale, but personally speaking, I didn't know how to end 24. Like, would you want them to have killed? Like, I mean, Jack's never going to find happiness. I doubt they're going to kill him. I didn't really know what to expect as far as his character was concerned. And he is the center point of the show. So, you know, Chloe got a nice, I mean, there was no real closure, but I don't know how you end the show at 24. How would you have done it, I guess?
I would have left Renee alive. Spoiler alert.
Oops.
Oh, too late now.
It happened several weeks ago.
I personally would have, you know, been okay with that if he had a happy ending. Maybe him and Renee could have went off to go with Kim and Terry and, you know, his stepson or whatever. But I don't think 24 has ever been a show that has made Jack happy. I mean, there's the movie, maybe he'll end on a happy note, but it just was never in the character. I mean, the happiest he's ever been was, I guess, when he faked his death at the end of season 4.
You're all pretty much speaking Chinese to me because I've never seen the show, but I'll take your word for it.
I recommend you checking out the show. He may not recommend it all the time. It has its fair share of really out there twists. You'll find that every season they have terrible, terrible screening processes because everybody's a mole and they can never figure out how they hired him. The building has been bombed, I think, 4 times now.
Oh my god.
I would say check out the first 3 seasons of 24. The first in my opinion, undeniably the best. And perhaps this is actually an example of another show that had a concept that worked best for one season.
I would agree with you there, just because after a while it kind of I enjoyed the show, but it's kind of set up in like it was pretty much like 10, 10, and then like 4 episode arcs where they'd build up something, then they kind of resolve it, then they build up something new that somehow like there's way too many coincidences on the show at times. Like season 4 was the worst, where I think the bad guy had something like 7 contingency plans.
I know that the first season there. Is that what you mean about the 10, 10, 4 episode arc? That like, because I know the first thing he was doing was I think it was the thing with his daughter, right? With Alicia Cuthbert.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was that. And I've seen that much.
That was different. Just because I think the way they set it up is that they ran for 13 episodes and they didn't know if they were going to get canceled or not. So that kind of resolves perfectly, and then they go into this whole thing that gets really stupid with the wife getting like 6-hour amnesia and stuff like that. Ugh. But.
Okay.
Yeah, the show
Dennis
had
Hopper featuring the worst Eastern European accent ever.
But he was an awesome hammy villain. I mean, they also tend to do villains pretty well. If you know, like Nina was an awesome character, Sherry was an awesome character. I think the problem is after those, like Sherry and Nina and even President Palmer, they just never really had that magic again. Like, I think that was one of your issues with season 8 was how stupid President Taylor became.
My issue with season 8 was how stupid everybody became, but that is another rant.
Except for Jack.
No, he was stupid too.
He was not stupid.
He was clairvoyant, but he was also stupid.
This is
a long-standing argument between the two of us. In any case, I think that the other problem with 24 was that it was never able to bring everything back to a small personal plot for Jack. Season one, after all, was only about the assassination or potential assassination of a presidential candidate. And then from there we came to bombings, nuclear bombs, viruses, nuclear bombs, nuclear bombs, nuclear bombs.
And yeah. Nuclear bombs.
I think that all came to a head during season 6, where they actually blew up a nuke in the first 4 episodes of the show. What do you do after that? Like, they blew up a nuke. You have 20 hours to kill now. And it's like, you know, you can't top that anymore. And they kept on doing it. So it's a bunch of really throwing together plot points that makes no sense. But yeah, I think that's one of the things people always say about season 1 is that it's not ever personal anymore. It's always about him being a Superman and saving the world. I mean, it's great for an action show where you get to see these big fights and stuff like that. But yeah, I think that's what they tried to do with Renee, where, you know, it's like it was the closest thing he had to a connection since Terry. Then they go and kill her, and he just snaps. And, you know, he spends the next 8 hours killing things that move, anything. Though his biggest fight, they don't even show.
Yes, indeed. That was rather annoying.
Yeah, that was kind of a disappointment. But I feel like we're just, like, me and Michael out of this conversation. So what shows do you want to talk about?
Well, I actually, I'm a big Joss Whedon fan, and I mean, this is old news. This was like back in January, I think, when the show was canceled, but Joss Whedon got the axe again from Fox with Dollhouse.
Outside of Buffy and I guess Angel, has any of his shows already survived that long?
Not that I know of. Firefly was canceled after the first season, but I mean, he got the okay for the Serenity movie, which I heard was, you know, as good as it could be. I'm going to be picking that up soon. I think I've ordered the show and the movie.
Maybe you should try to Judd Apatow, because Judd Apatow has the same hook where like every show he does is just too high concept for television. He's done Freaks and Geeks, you know,
Undeclared,
Undeclared and stuff like that. And they don't ask the season. They don't even, like, I know Undeclared, oh, yeah, it's like 13 out of the 18 episodes. But compare that to his career with movies. He's had, like, 40-Year-Old Virgin. He's had Superbad. He had Saving Sarah Marshall. And those were all hits. So, I mean, yeah.
From what I can see, he has, you know, he has great ideas for shows and whatnot. Yeah. So I guess people just, I don't know, maybe they just, I don't know what it is about it that they don't get it. I mean, there was Buffy and then Angel as far as TV series go. And, yeah, Firefly and Dollhouse. Two of which were canceled, but I think, well, wasn't Angel canceled, or did his only just run for 5 seasons?
I was going to say they were all canceled. All of his shows were canceled. The difference is, even though Angel and Buffy were canceled without real closure, they were given time. I mean, Buffy was it 7 years, Angel was 5 years or something like that.
Angel was five.
Yeah. And then, yeah, but it was given time to shine or whatever.
This has been an unfortunate pattern on Fox, unfortunately. They have a tendency to commission TV series that would never appeal to 18 to 34-year-old male demographics, at least as they understand them, and then put them on and then give them no advertising or promotion or marketing whatsoever, and then cancel them later because they do not bring in enough ratings. It seems a little bit – in fact, Fox Network, if I may make a comparison, is a little bit like third parties developing on Nintendo platforms. They do not back up their products. And it seems to me that there must be a better way to do business. But what do I know?
Interestingly enough, and I guess for Buffy and Angel fans out there, apparently there was a canonical like eighth season that they tried to get out through the comic books.
I think those are still coming out, I believe.
I believe they're still coming out. And apparently, I'm reading from this website over here. It says, due in part to the series' renewed popularity, Whedon is also finalizing talks with the BBC to broadcast the first posthumous Buffy television production, which is a 90-minute TV movie following Giles' youth called Ripper.
Nice.
I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me because I haven't seen it yet, but I plan to. But also, I think it's the same deal with Angel, too, that they have a comic book series that's canonical that goes on afterwards.
It would mean that many of the original cast would not have to return. So, for example, Sarah Michelle Gellar would not have to return as in the role of Buffy. I do not know what she looks like these days.
Yeah, I was about to say, some of them have aged a lot, and unless they skip the head like 10 years, it would be kind of weird. But I'm trying to think of all the shows that Fox has canceled that have gone on to find cult followings. Like, I'm sure everybody's a huge fan of Arrested Development. Oddly enough, was not a show I knew existed on Fox.
I heard about Arrested Development from someone that had the DVDs and recommended it to me, so I didn't know it came from there either.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's like everybody's like, oh, you should check out the show, you should check out the show, and I checked out the show. It's a great show. I never knew it was on Fox, and it's kind of, I mean, Fox has some of the longest running shows like The Simpsons, and I guess The Simpsons.
They canceled Family Guy initially, too.
Yeah, they canceled Futurama. They canceled Titus. They canceled, I think, Undercared.
Mm-hmm. They probably canceled Freaks and Geeks, too.
They are attempting to kill Human Target.
Yeah, they are attempting to kill Human Target. They put it on Friday.
I've never seen Human Target.
I mean, I'm sure it's not the greatest show, but I think they canceled the Sarah Connor Chronicles, which I enjoyed much more than Terminator 3.
Well, of course.
But we can spend a whole day talking about shows that Fox has canceled at some point.
Here's an interesting statistic for you. It turns out that people who watch ratings know that ratings for Fox TV shows in their first season are artificially low. It seems that audiences have caught on to the fact that Fox cancels a lot of shows in their first season. Once they survive to the second season, ratings climb up.
That's false because Dollhouse was canceled in the second season. Very false.
Dollhouse never had any chance.
Yeah, Dollhouse was one of those shows that I think got renewed just because of the writer's strike, where they just kind of didn't have enough pilots, and they're like, okay, you know what? Let's just put it back on the air.
I heard it was good.
Well, no, I'm not saying it wasn't good. I'm just saying like there were shows that just got a second win just because they had nothing to replace it with.
Pushing Daisies might have been another example.
Yeah, Pushing Daisies was a show that got renewed just because the writer's strike didn't have enough time for pilots, and they were like, you know, I mean, that was pretty much canceled before it even got to finish. But that was ABC. Let's see. Looking at this, Fireside, Futurama, Arrested Development, Keen Eddie, Terminator, The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., Wonderfalls, The Tick, The Lone Gunman, Millennium. Just a list of shows that Fox has canceled over the years, and this is just... I guess, who do you think is worse in this regard? Fox or NBC or ABC or CBS?
I would say that NBC News to be better until they attempted to hold on to Jay Leno.
I mean, that decision has caused a lot of troubles for them this season. I mean, just because of the Ton of Track Hour, it shows that Girl and Order got neutered because you can't really do the same thing at 9 o'clock as you can do at 10. And just changing time, you know those shows that just keep on changing time slots, use audience that way. You know, like, I don't know what day of the week Law and Order was on this year. Was it Friday?
It was Monday.
Oh, was it? Wow. So it was.
It was I'm sorry. It was on Friday last year, which was still this season, and then it was moved to Monday when the Jay Leno show bombed.
Okay. I see. I did it, and I watch NBC. I watch it. I used to watch it twice a week, I think. Mondays for Heroes and Chuck, and then Thursdays for the comedy lineup. And I didn't know about Law and Order moving because you would think they would advertise their show, because I believe The Office is their highest rated show.
Probably. So
you would bombard The Office with advertisement for these shows. But
I think the reason why The Office is, just a quick aside note, is that the reason The Office is as big as it is because I guess one of their other competing shows is Parks and Recreation, which didn't really start getting very good, very funny until the second season. So they're just kind of riding in The Office's wake. The Office is getting it's starting to get a little stale for me now. Like, the sixth season's been kind of for the most part for me. And like the last, I want to say four episodes has been really good, but.
Actually, that was another issue, and I don't know how long this segment's going on, but that was an issue I had with a lot of shows this season. Even between the cancellations and even, it's like a lot of shows felt like they went nowhere. Like, I didn't feel like The Office had a season finale. I didn't feel like 30 Rock had a season finale. I didn't feel like How I Met Your Mother had a season finale. Chuck had a season finale that I thought was kind of cheap. Well, the last 10 minutes or so. I don't know how Law and Order ended. I understand that if they wanted to cancel it, I thought it was a douche move for them to cancel it with 2 weeks to go, so they couldn't even write a proper send-off. And I believe they're starting a new one next season anyhow.
But it seems to me that this is pointing up an issue that with NBC that perhaps it has to do something with the ascension of Jeff Zucker as president of programming. But it used to be that NBC showed quite a lot of patience with their shows. The Office was not a hit initially, but it got a second season, it got a third season, and then eventually it was built up into a very big, successful show. The same thing has happened with 30 Rock, and one could name some other shows that have Yes, and now NBC is giving each show only a year, not even a chance. Mercy has been killed after one season, Southland has been killed after one season, Trauma has been killed after one season. Perhaps they were not that good to begin with, and they had no potential. But NBC used to have patience.
I think part of the problem with those shows are, again, those are more like the 10 o'clock shows. Like, the type of shows you put on after prime time, before the news comes on. And they didn't have that this season because of the Jay Leno fiasco. So a bunch of these shows were like, okay, you know what? It's not working. We have to try something else because you lost 5 hours of TV each week. I'm not saying they would have succeeded if they had that 10 o'clock hour, but I assume more of them would have been given better chances.
All right, guys. Well, I think we're pretty good, except for Xantar. I know Xantar's got to get his word in, so I guess we'll let him do that. So, Xantar, off to you.
And now, as promised, a special comment directed at NBC head of programming, Jeff Zucker. Mr. Zucker, and so it has come to this. The Jay Leno show is an abject failure and national laughingstock. Conan O'Brien is lost. Ratings in shambles, and half of the non-reality TV lineup canned. And the latest victim, veteran TV series Law & Order. Though it is understandable in this day and age, when advertisers endlessly chase the attention of people between the ages of 18 and 30, that the story of New York City's war on crime may no longer make financial sense to you. Be that as it may, surely a respected mainstay of your program, one which has equaled the record set by Gunsmoke for longest-running American primetime television series, deserved better than to be canceled in its final 2 weeks. At a time when critics and viewers all agree that the series has experienced a creative resurgence, aided by perhaps the best cast lineup since the days of Jerry Orbach, with solid ratings performance in the face of CSI Miami, despite receiving absolutely no aid from lead-ins nor from your own marketing. This well-respected television institution goes out not with a bang, but with a whimper. No opportunity to inform the faithful fans that the end is near. No time to write a proper send-off for long-standing characters such as Anita Van Buren and Jack McCoy. From any other network, this would be seen as an act of corporate malfeasance delivering the black eye to the public image of the company as a whole. From NBC, it is Thursday. But I need not look to public image to make a case for your utter worthlessness. Instead, I can simply cite the numbers, you know, the ones you actually care about. From its lofty position 10 years ago at the top of the ratings charts, NBC has now tumbled to fourth place. In all your mediocre ambitions, surely even you never aspired to have this achievement, staying just barely ahead of CW. It is not even the disaster of Jay Leno that did you in, though it serves as the final nail in the coffin. This was a state of affairs long in the making. Your recent bright ideas have included Mercy, a show which none could distinguish from ER. Southland, a show which none could distinguish from the dozen other police procedurals set in California. Trauma, a show which none could distinguish from Third Watch. My Own Worst Enemy, a show which maybe someone could have distinguished from something if it had lasted more than four episodes. And to generate more appeal among young viewers, your brilliant idea was to revive TV series most of them were not alive to see, and do it badly. Knight Rider, Bionic Woman, American Gladiators. And let us not even get into the reality programming. Once a viewer has seen I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, could it be any clearer to them that you have no new ideas? At times like this, it is only fitting to borrow the words of Al Pacino in the classic film Glengarry Glen Ross. Where did you learn your trade, you idiot? Who told you that you could work with men? You child. You company man. I only wish that Alec Baldwin could take time off from playing the role of a much more competent executive than yourself and instead come to your office to enter you into a contest. I'd wager good money that you wouldn't win the steak knives. So profound is my disgust and contempt for your incompetence that I have spent these past 20 minutes in the company of these fine gentlemen and forgotten to insult their intelligence the entire time. Ordinarily, the tools of reason and discourse are reserved for use with other human beings rather than embolic coprophages such as yourself. But on the off chance that anything anybody could say matters to you, consider why you went into this business. Perhaps you have fooled yourself into thinking that your ultimate goal was to earn a golden parachute for yourself, scurry away when the board of directors finally fires you, and then spend the rest of your days in repose and laziness. But consider what this will cost to your children. I know something of business, and I know that in the corporate world, sometimes the sins of the father are indeed visited upon his children. Who will take them under wing as a favor to you? What can anybody gain by association to you? You have built for yourself a name in many ways more poisonous than that of George W. Bush, for at least President Bush was undeniably good at one part of his job, which was to win elections. You, sir, are an abject failure in every aspect of your profession. There can be no justice now unless you resign your position immediately, refund your earnings, and find an occupation for which you are suited. The used car lot down the street from me has an opening. You have a demonstrable talent for bamboozling people, if nothing else. This is your chance to shape your legacy while you still can. If you do not leave with a modicum of respect and dignity, at least it will be known that you recognized you were in over your head and that the stockholders you work for would be better served by another leader. Or you can stay and try to salvage the incomprehensible morass you have created, although you will fail and everywhere you go, and as people realize that you still haven't been escorted out of the building, the question will be implicit in everyone's eyes. Whoever told you that you could work with men? I'm Keith Santerman. Good night. Good luck. You gotta work to feed the soul, but I can't do this all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman.
All right, so now we are going to move on to our cocktail chatter for the, last 2 weeks since we've been, since we've been gone for a while.
I blame that on Michael's drug addiction, but...
Listen, I have no drug addictions that you know of. Anyway. Earl, if you want to start, go for it.
Okay, mine is rather simple. As you know, there are tons of crappy Wii accessories that have come out since the system made its debut. You got lightsabers, tennis rackets, golf clubs, boxing gloves. All of it makes no sense. But this company called CTA has decided to release an inflatable Mario Kart controller. And while it sounds goofy and stupid, I am actually tempted to pick it up. For $40, you get to sit in a little plastic car and drive Mario Kart around. I do not know, but sounds more fun than that.
I can't think of many others that are more fun than that either. Like, I'm looking through CTA's Wii accessories, and I mean, outside of the standard rubber, like, sleeves, I guess, for the controls, they have, like, game disc stands, weighted gloves, the wings. Have you guys seen the wings?
Wait, what's a game disc stand? Like, is it something you just put your games, like, a bookcase?
Yeah, kind of like a CD case thing. They also actually have a pretty cool rubber grip controller thing here. That it's like a sleeve, and then it's got like little rubber grips for the side. So when you play games like New Super Mario Brothers or the classic stuff like on the Virtual Console or whatever.
Yeah, I do know people. They actually have grips for the Wii as well, like actual grips you put your hands in. That is special.
I have the. I'm also seeing here they have push-up bars for Wii Fit for the balance board. Makes no sense to me.
Now, this inflatable car, it is inflatable, and it is made out of some sort of plastic. Do we know if it is a flotation device? Would it actually float? Is it buoyant?
I don't know if I want to test. Well, I guess it would be a piece of plastic, so it probably has no type of tech whatsoever in it. So it probably is pure plastic. So it probably would float. That would be pretty awesome at the beach in your Mario Kart inflatable car going down the water. Well, I'm sure I would be a hit.
There's a warning in one of the articles that pulls the source from the joystick article about this controller, and it says, "Warning: We understand that the urge to play Mario Kart from a pool will be strong. I imagine that the urge to bank around turns will also be strong. Do not combine the two." So that answers your question, I guess.
Very well put.
Very well put indeed.
I suppose this was not tied to Mario Kart specifically because there are other kart games out there.
I mean, it looks like it's modeled after an actual Mario Kart vehicle.
I think so. Like, if anything, it looks like one like the Mario Kart DS one for Mario, for example, just like the colors.
And there aren't – what other kart racing games are there on the Wii? I mean, there are other racing games, but I don't know if any other kart racing games on the Wii. Well, that's not true. There's the M&M one, but...
That's the M&M one.
I guess we should also add that this controller would work with other racing games on the Wii, such as Excite Truck, Excite Bot, and some Need for Speed games.
Yeah, well, you know, the Need for Speed games on the Wii, none of the recent ones have been any good because they've been doing they were doing more of the arcade style racers for the Wii, and then doing the more simulation like Gran Turismo style, if you will, racers for the PS3 and the Xbox 360. If I remember correctly,
I mean I prefer arcadey racing games just because it's a bit more fun.
Mm-hmm.
But. I understand. Like I've actually tried a Need for Speed because at some point I had this phase where I would just try a bunch of different Wii games at the start just to see what people would come up with. And they had some interesting control schemes. Some of it was really stupid, but it was novel. Like they had one I remember for one of the original Need for Speeds where you used the analog stick, the nunchuck, as a to steer and drive, and then you used the Wiimote as your gas and pedal. So you'd put it up to brake and then push it down for gas.
Mm-hmm.
It was, again, a novel concept, but, yeah, it can only go so far.
Indeed. All right, I guess I think I'll go right ahead with my cocktail chatter story. So, let's see. We all know that the Russians, they wanted to start, you know, they started the whole space race with Sputnik. And I guess what they're going to try and do now is get on a mission to Mars. Apparently, they got a space team. It's about six guys. From Russia, Europe, and China, and to prepare for a simulated Mars trip, they're actually going to stick them in like an isolated chamber for about 520 days. It's three Russians, an Italian, Colombian, a Frenchman, and a Chinese man. That's the.
It's part of a bad joke.
Yeah, I guess so. It sounds like a very bad joke, but
actually, it puts me in mind of a real life biodome.
Well,
that was a real bad movie.
Movies about this concept.
Well, I've never seen Biodome, so I guess I can't comment on that. But from what I've heard, I'm best off without it, or without seeing it, I should say. But I find this quote interesting since it technically kind of makes the whole research experiment pointless. But it says, I think when talking about a human mission to the Red Planet, it will probably still take 20 or more likely even 30 years to go there. So it's like they're losing a year of their life for something that probably won't even happen.
Almost 2 years for something that is 20 years off, so they won't be, again, to use this expression, spring chickens at that point.
Yeah, I mean, okay, 20 to 30 years, depending on the age of these people. Because I would imagine that if they were going to do it, they'd have to do it with the same people, because not everyone reacts the same way with other people or reacts well to, you know, to isolation. But excuse me. Also, you know, when they say, oh, it could take 20 years to do this, you know, 5 to 10 years later, they're saying, oh, well, you know, it's right around the corner. Just give us a little time.
Yeah, but I mean, 20 to 30 years is a long time for anybody. And
oh, absolutely.
Even if they can do it now, I mean, who's to say 20 to 30 years will make them? I mean, what happens if one person goes missing? Does the whole equation change, or do they just say, okay, we have five guys going up there now, or is it like, oh, you know, this one doesn't get along with that one, so we have to scrap the project and find six other dudes to start off with?
It may actually be worse than that. It may be that travelers to Mars may give up their whole lives because when one goes to Mars, in order to make a return, one has to create a rocket that will lift off of the Mars surface and travel back to Earth. Mars has the same gravity as Earth, and therefore a rocket lifting off from Mars must be as powerful as your average rocket flying off Earth.
Apparently,
therefore, the solution they are proposing is a one-way trip.
Oh, wow.
That's kind of morbid.
That's pretty serious.
No, they don't mean that. They mean that they will be transporting an entire laboratory and living system and transporting several dozen or 100 people over to Mars.
Yeah, but if something goes wrong, you can make all the type of calculations you want, but between here to Mars is a long trip, and if something goes wrong, they're stranded out there with no way to get back home.
Well, in that case, that just makes them very much like Christopher Columbus.
From what I'm reading, it's not going to – I guess it's not true isolation, because I guess they're going to be split up at some point. But it says during the surface operations, quote unquote, after 250 days, they'll be divided with three moving to the Martian surface, quote unquote, while the other three stay in the orbiting spacecraft, quote unquote, for a month. That's pretty it's pretty serious. Mm-hmm. Communication with Earth will be only via email, with connections occasionally disrupted. It will include a maximum 40-minute delay, as on a real Mars mission.
Very well.
I guess so. Xantar, what do you got for us today, buddy?
Tonight's cocktail chatter, a disturbing report about Microsoft factories producing their electronic devices in China. In one particular factory, these are the conditions at which work-study students, quote-unquote, ages 16 to 17 work. A typical shift starts at 7:45 in the morning and ends at 10:55 in the evening. Typical pay is 65 cents an hour, which brings to a take-home wage of 52 cents an hour, because they must buy their food on the premises. Workers are prohibited from talking, listening to music, or using the bathroom during work hours. As punishment, workers who make mistakes are made to clean the bathrooms. There are also constant complaints of sexual harassment, and they are housed in primitive dorm rooms and other such worker abuses. Now, this is nothing new to China. However, the most disturbing fact of this report is that when the U.S. Chamber of Commerce was ready to lobby China, Microsoft opposed improving working conditions in these factories. We will have a link to this report on the Game Tavern page.
I don't know what to say to that. I mean, that's a pretty messed up situation. And I don't see how – I mean, I understand it's China. I don't see how we're all an American company to get away with that.
We should note, by the way, that this is a report about Microsoft in China. There is no – there's no indication that this is exclusively a problem with Microsoft. I am quite certain, for example, that Sony and Nintendo have employed factories which are subject to similar abuses.
This actually reminds me of something. I don't know where I read it, but I know I read it somewhere this week that Nintendo is launching an investigation into one of their studios because there's apparently a high suicide rate.
Oh, well, I don't think that's just Nintendo. I believe it's the Foxconn company. They actually make a lot of electronics for like Apple and HP and stuff like that. And yeah, their company's under pretty heavy scrutiny because of the fact that they're getting heavy suicide rates. I mean, apparently Foxconn is dancing around the numbers when they talk to the press, but apparently the numbers are actually pretty serious. They're trying to do their little preventative measures or whatever by having company therapists talk to them and whatnot, but that doesn't stop the fact that what is driving these people to want to kill themselves they work in a company. Probably, I would imagine it'd have to be like a sweatshop or something like that. It's going to have to be something ridiculous. Regardless of how automated production of electronics is, there has to be bad working conditions at somewhere in there.
And where is this is also in China.
Yeah, Foxconn is also in China, but that's also one of the reasons why they always have the Chinese knockoffs and whatnot.
Yeah.
Well, the thing with the Chinese knockoffs is that when all the parts are being made there in China, it's a lot easier for them to violate intellectual property rights because they have access to whatever hardware is right there.
Fair enough.
So in conclusion, we at Nerds on the Rocks urge you, the listeners, please check the manufacturing conditions under which your consoles and electronic devices were made. It is very important that you do not support abusive worker practices, and it is not clear to us that all Microsoft products were made under these conditions. It is possible that Xbox is made, as I understand them, in Mexico, were made under considerably better conditions, but this is something that bears further investigation, and I repeat again that this link will be posted on the Game Tavern forums.
Sounds good. Oh, before I forget, since we're almost done with the cocktail chatter here, I believe Earl has an interesting public service announcement, if you will, for us.
Yes, on a bit of a different note, we are, because of one of our members, Danny, whose forum name is Tahita, signed up for a cancer charity called School Chats Cancer, and this is on DeviantArt. Again, the link will be posted on the forums. And it's pretty much a charity where you donate money and then an artist either designs a picture or some type of artwork for you. So you get back something for your money. So it's, and again, the link will be posted. And Danny has posted the link for the artwork for this podcast, as well as a link to the podcast on the site. So we figured it'd be just as nice to give back to them and make others aware of the situation.
Cancer's something pretty mean. I mean, Dennis Hopper recently just passed away after dealing with cancer. I've had family members that have passed away from cancer, so it affects everybody. So it's definitely it'd be nice for anyone that wanted to drop, stop by and even a dollar or two if it's as far as like donations go. With selling art and stuff like that. So yeah, just give that a once over, and screw Chad's cancer.
Screw Chad's cancer, indeed.
Well, gentlemen, I think that is going to wrap it up for us today. This is Michael, once again, Magus113, signing off after my, I guess we can call it my return to hosting the Nerds on the Rocks podcast. Earl and Xantar, your send-offs.
We'll see you in 3 weeks, as we're going to try to set up a system where it's like 2 weeks, then 3 weeks, then 4 weeks, just to see if he gets the pattern, and we'll see you when we see you.
Thank you very much for tuning in.
See you hopefully next week.